What's up, what's up, what's up, what's going on, family? Welcome, welcome, welcome to Office Hours with Professor Carl Tone Jones. I am Professor Carl Tone Jones. And like I said before, you know, my co-host, you know, she's taking some time to herself. So, you know, I'm letting her hang out, do whatever. Make sure you share this broadcast, family, because we want to make sure we spread this message worldwide. Make sure everybody gets on board. Just click that little share button in the bottom left corner of your screen. And also, family, if you're taking this in, make sure that you are a supporter of the Independence Day Project. The Independence Day Project is the most controversial documentary since or film on Black empowerment since The Spook Who Sat by the Door. It has received glowing reviews from everyone that I have heard from, everyone that has seen it. Mostly everyone who has seen the Independence Day Project has taken it amongst themselves to start organizing amongst themselves and also organizing with cohorts all around the world. Not just the city, the world, Craig. So welcome, family. A few announcements to make. Coming up, this actually coming up on June 9th, I want to make sure I get this right. We're going to be having a program called Philly Love the Mic, and it's all about representing our sisters, the influence that sisters have had with music and so forth, and the effect that music has had on Black women. I myself will be one of the panelists on the program. The program will be at the Sankofa House, 906 South 49th Street. That's 906 South 49th Street here in Philadelphia. Please get there at 6 o'clock. We will be hosting, or Sister Sunshine will be hosting the event. Please make sure you come through. We're going to be talking about, you know, just basically the influence of music on Black women throughout the, you know, we're going to span back as far as, I'm going back as far as actually about 50 years, you know, talking about the span in terms of the eras, the different eras of music and how it has affected Black women. Also, family, make sure to bring your $5 donation at the door, because it is going to a lovely, we are donating to a lovely, what is it? So hold on a second, I'm terrible with these promos. But we're donating to a lovely cause. One of the causes we're donating to is one of the programs is an educational program that educates and teaches our children about arts and culture. So make sure you join us. Wakusu, let me get some shout outs before we get started. Wakusu, Brother Samari, Dr. Samari Swagger, rather. And y'all catch Dr. Samari Swagger's radio show on the Source Network, The Pendulum. You know, I myself have been a guest on that show several times. Dr. Samari always has an invigorating show, very outspoken guest in regards to issues in the community, and they always have excellent dialogue. So make sure y'all tune into that. I see we have Sister Elizabeth McGraw. Peace and black power to you, sister. I see you listening, but are you sharing? Sharing, yes, yes. My brother Ishmael, peace and black power to you, King. Ish, brother Ish, you know, is one of the members. He's been one of the, he's actually in the Independence Day Project, you know, and he, you know, his brother's been doing that hard work out there in Chester. You know, anybody know anything about Chester, PA? You know, that's like the Compton of the East Coast. You know what I'm saying? And my brother's been putting in work on the ground. You know what I'm saying? Dash, I know. peace, brother Carl Dash. Yeah, I figured that's what you was asking for. I was a minute late. And my brother's punctual. So shout out to everybody. Make, like I said before, man, make sure y'all share this broadcast. Get the hell out of here, Shadow. Get out. Always trying to be somewhere. Goddamn cat. Like a cat burglar slit jumping up on him. Hey, brother Arthur Terry, what's going on, brother? That's one of my brothers. Used to be on my staff at CEP. One of the co-teachers in the classrooms holding it down as we graduated senior after senior after senior class and sent them off to college and secondary school. So what's going on, family? It's good to see we're able to keep in contact with the family and everybody involved. So, family, I want to really talk about some of the things that's been happening. And yes, I'm ghetto as hell with my cup. That's right. I love this damn cup. This cup has so many utilities. This is a hot and warm cup. You know, you can put hot things into this cup. You can put cold things, cold compresses into this cup. So that could be my tea cup. And it could also be my cold ice beverage cup. This is hot as shit. Now, I might not be able to tell, but a brother has darkened a few shades. I want y'all to understand it. I take that seriously. Y'all better not be out there laughing. I have come down a few shades. You know what I'm saying? Getting out in that sun today. I was sitting there reading my brother's book. You know, the blueprint, you know, BSU handbook. And my brother IJ Tayemba. Y'all make sure y'all go and get that brother's book, man. I started reading the book, and I'm at the beginning, but I couldn't put it down. Unfortunately, I had things to do. But this book right here gives you a blueprint. This is a blueprint to how to actually build not just a student organization trying to create black empowerment, but also it gives you a step-by-step detail that can be also utilized in community development when you're trying to create community empowerment. So make sure y'all go out and get my brother's book. You know, once again, I'll show you one more time so you can go to my brother. I'm going to tag my brother in there if he's not here already watching. The blueprint of BSU handbook, and this basically talks about how they created a student union at Syracuse University called the SAS, you know, the Student African American Association. And one of the things they did on campus was they were able to protest and create such havoc that they were able to hold the university accountable for not only building a Black Studies or African Studies program, but also hire black professors, and as well as making them actually build a whole building. So they got reparations from Syracuse University. They were able to get Syracuse University to spend millions of dollars because of their activity, their protest. They tried to kick my brother out of the school several times. He had big time people on his team. Like, you know, we heard of the famous Syracuse Orange basketball team, but how many of you know that Big Derek Coleman, who played several years in the NBA, was also one of the more avid supporters of my brother's organization, the SAS, and it was all detailed in his book. So make sure y'all get a copy of that book. Hit my brother up. You know what I'm saying? And grab a copy of that book. We want to make sure that we start having copies of these books on deck when we do our personal appearances. So thank you all for tuning in this evening. And hopefully, let me let people know on Instagram that we're live. Because I got to let the family on Instagram know that we're live. Because if they don't know that we're live right now, you know what'll happen. You already know. You know, I'll get text messages and emails. And why didn't you tell me you were on? You know, like the time's not posted. You did. So give me 2 seconds, family. I'm just going to do this real quick. It's not going to take long. You know, and it's done. So, all right, let's get into the topic tonight, man. Tonight's topic is about making us the priority. You know what I'm saying? Tonight's it's about making us the priority. I have seen on so many occasions lately, whereas we're getting into this thing where we're having this moral war, this moral conflict of addressing the inconsistencies and in terms of how we're treated versus members of the white community. And we seem to keep harboring on the idea of showing the hypocrisy, showing how, well, if an unarmed black child was walking down the street, he'd probably get killed. This child, this white kid or whatever, who is armed to the hilt with AR-15s, M-16s, you know, grenades and all types of weaponry and have actually fired on law enforcement and you know, taken out, you know, multiple bodies, specifically with these school shootings. We keep coming back consistently talking about how unfair the treatment is. Like, we don't know that already. So, you know, we tend to have these arguments about how unfair the treatment is and how inconsistent the treatment is between how we're treated versus members of the white community. And we go off and we start talking about, the situation where now it's become codified behavior where everywhere we go, white folk are calling the police on us. You know, you can't take a nap in the dorm without the police being called on, even though you have a key to an apartment in the dorm. You can't have a barbecue at a park because you got white folk that don't want you barbecuing in their presence. You can't have a drink at a restaurant. You know, you can't use a bathroom or a restroom in a restaurant without having the cops. You can't even fucking go into your own house anymore without having the cops called on you. And we keep running these things, and then I keep seeing the comparisons where we're showing, you know, one hand, this, you know, brother or sister was trying to do this, that, and the other. The police called, they were arrested, they were harassed, blah, blah, blah. On the other hand, you know, we have this white person, and whatever happened, and then we're saying to ourselves, well, where's the consistency at in this? Where's the consistency? And there is no consistency, but we already know this. We already know that the hypocrisy exists. So the question then becomes, who are we complaining to? And what is your end goal in bringing this up? Because there has to be a point to you bringing this up. There has to be a valid point to us keep rekindling these things and going over and over and over. And I've often said in the past, family, that it is a total and utter waste of time to try to have a moral compass or base morality or integrity or any of these other things, you know, in these arguments when the system of white supremacy and the people who live in the system of white supremacy, the people who the system of white supremacy promotes, which are white people, they do not give a damn about morals. All they care about is winning. All they care about, you know, all they care about is coming out on top. They don't care if they have to cheat. I mean, you look at it. You know, there was a big scandal in the bike racing world over the last 10 years. And it involved Lance Armstrong. And what happened, you know, there was the Tour de France. And what happened, they found out that Lance Armstrong was, you know, he was doping up and he was also, you know, using artificial urine to take to pass the test because, you know, outside of that, they really didn't have a test taking method where they could actually trace the drugs that they were using. Turns out every fucking body, everybody that was in the Tour de France were cheating. Everybody. And see, that's white supremacy. See, they make the rules, but then In order to win, if they have to go outside of the rules, then that's what they'll do. See, that's when you call by any means necessary. That's the real by any means necessary. You know what I'm saying? And what you got to understand is that's how they are in every facet in life. You know what I'm saying? That's how they are in every aspect of life, every aspect of culture. This is what they're like. You have to understand it. So to think that you can hold them to a moral fiber, no, you get two impressions of white. And this is the big mistake we make with this. We want to assume that the Opie Cunningham version, the facts of life version, the Leave It to Beaver version of the white community, those white folks, we want to believe that that is the white people we see on a day-to-day basis. We don't want to come to the conclusion that the Jim Crow edition, you know what I'm saying, the Nazi armband wearing, the triple K, you know what I'm saying, hoodie edition of white folk is who we actually deal with on a day-to-day basis. That's who you see on a day-to-day basis. Let me tell you something. Back when, Jim Crow was popping, like right when they were having open lynchings and things of that nature, they would announce that shit in the newspaper. And even though less than 10% of the counties that were announced that they were going to have a picnic, or where they were going to picnic and hang them, even though they had that, less than 10% of the population was a Klan member, 95% of the town showed up and indulged in that activity. You see what I'm saying? So it's like saying a member of your family is in a fraternity or a sorority. You're not in a sorority, but you support some of the things they do. That's what you have with white folk, and that's their mentality in terms of dealing with us. There's no rules, no nothing they're bound to. You got to practice, understand the Dred Scott decision. We keep going over these things over and over, hoping that one day you will research this. Don't just sit here and try to be entertained. I'm not trying to entertain you. I'm trying to educate you on a lot of things that we're dealing with. So coming full circle, we're at a dilemma in the community. We have got to stop these protests, because what it really speaks to is that we're still trying to have our voices heard. We're still trying to, speak to the consciousness. We're still trying to appeal to the morality of people who have never shown us any morality, who have never shown us any humanity. You got to stop begging the white man's attention for the things that they do. The white man knows what he does. The white woman knows what they doeth. And they know these things. This is no secret. Racism is not a secret to them. Trust and believe. White folk understand perfectly how racism works. White folk understand perfectly how the system of white supremacy works. I was walking, I think it was the day that parking authority bullshit when I was downtown in here in Philly. And I was, I stood in line for absolutely no reason at all. I found out later on that night. But I was actually walking through the parking lot. And I heard this brother having this diligent conversation, this earnest conversation with this older white man, not much older, but an older white man. And the brother was trying to break down why rap is not violent and what people, he was trying to articulate, the different meanings of certain words and why white people shouldn't be afraid of this and basically how all races are misunderstanding. And I see this shit all the time. I see this plantation explaining all the time where black people, for some strange reason, feel as though it's our obligated duty to explain what racism is to white folk. Newsflash, family. White folk understand what racism is. Well and good. They don't need your explanation. In fact, if you sit down and if you actually, blend into their circles every once in a while, you'll actually hear them discussing the benefits of racism and how it benefits them and their community. And they give no fucks about you being there after a while, especially after a few drinks. You know what I'm saying? And if you run into an honest white man, they'll tell you all the conversations they have about race when no black folk are around. When there are no people of color around, they will tell you all the conversations they have. If you run into an honest white man or honest white woman, and I say that in jest. Excuse me. But the point of the matter is, they understand. So when we have these situations where you're trying to appeal to their moral fabric by calling them out on their hypocrisy. Basically, what it amounts to is you're begging the white man's attention. You want the white man to acknowledge that he was wrong. You want the white man to acknowledge that he supports a system that's unjust, it's not fair, it's unbalanced, it's criminal. You want them to acknowledge that they take part in an oppressive regime against other people, non-white folks, specifically black people. And guess what, family? You're wasting your time. You are wasting your time trying to explain to these, or trying to get these white folk to see from your vantage point. They already know what it looks like from your vantage point, and they have no fucks to give. So why are we consistently, challenging them or trying to, get them to understand these things? They understand it. This is not a secret to them. They know how this works. We had to stop worrying about it. So we have several situations that have come up lately. And we have totally, going off board. We've totally gone, over the deep end in desperation for their attention. So much to the fact that do we realize as a black community that according to, since the election of Trump, you have to understand something very significant happened. When Donald Trump got elected, it wasn't that Donald Trump's election itself was significant, but the actual event signified the end of any this country's any obligatory affiliation to black people. It ended the day he got elected. This is why white folks started really coming out of their shells. And if you remember, the day that he got elected, the next morning, you had a lot of black women in particular who were saying that, typically speaking, like a white man will open the door to a convenience store in the morning on their way to work, they're all going in to get their coffee and their snacks, whatever. And then they all reported all over the country now. This is something you can go back and check this out. All over the country, sisters were saying that white men were threatening them when they opened the door, telling them things like, I would slit your throat if I could get away with it and dump your ass in the gutter. They were saying stuff like that to black women all over the country the day after Donald Trump got elected. You can go back and check this out. There were literally streaks of terror going through the black community. Black people all over the place had lost their fucking mind. When Donald Trump got elected, the next day, I don't think I have ever been as busy as I was that whole next week trying to calm people down in terms of them talking about leaving and going to other countries, talking about, now it's time to get together. Like, we've been trying to tell y'all that shit before. You know what I'm saying? Let's see if y'all read some of the code. Oh, yeah, definitely code for the New World Order. And while I'm at it, let me speak to the family real quick. Bukusu, Brother Samaj, peace and Black Power, Brother Chris Gibson, Bukusu, my young brother, Edward McGill. Brother Edward McGill is working on a masterpiece of work right now. Hopefully he comes out with it soon. I'm full support of that. Sorry if I don't catch some of the other comments, because I want to really drive a few points home real quick. But the day that Donald Trump got elected is signified that there is no more obligatory talk to black people. That black people were now a disenfranchised class to the point where there was not even any political legitimacy in talking to black people about black people for any other purpose. This is why you have these situations that have come up lately. And I want y'all to really understand what this is about. These things that you have seen come up, these issues, these topics that have come up in the last month, while they're racially charged, they don't have a damn thing to do with black people. I'm going to say that again. While they are racially charged, they don't have a damn thing to do with black people. All right, we're going to go back. We're going to go do the timeline. First, we had the whole NFL, the announcement by the NFL, right? The National Football League. They had this announcement that they were going to, instill these penalties for teams who allow their players to kneel during the playing of the so-called national anthem. All right, let me explain, family. That had nothing to do with the perception that it was an effective move on the part of the black community. What that spoke to was the fact that, unlike us, who've reneged on social pressures and things of that nature because we don't have a standard code of conduct and how to function. White folks said, oh, y'all letting these niggas get on the knee, y'all letting these niggas disrespect the flag? Okay, we're out. And they literally left the NFL in droves. They stopped coming to the games. They stopped watching them on TV. They were selling that shit on Subhub for like $5 a ticket. They just said, the hell with it. We're not dealing with the NFL. And so many entities lost money. It wasn't just the NFL, but you got all these television networks. You got all these different things that they were losing money because white folks stopped watching. Not because black people, I'm a chick. Listen, I live in Philly. Eagles won the Super Bowl. All these motherfuckers I was talking about, they didn't watch the game, was at the fucking Super Bowl celebration. They were taking snapshots. They were buying pictures all on Instagram. They ain't none of these cats give up watching football. None of these cats give up watching football. When we were doing the block-by-block thing with the black captains, we would walk by the house. You could tell when the Eagles scored a touchdown because the whole block was going off. You could tell when they had a fumble recovery. You could tell when they just did something crazy because you hear the whole block, you know, in angst and agony. I mean, so we know that it wasn't us that stopped this whole thing. It was the fact that white folk said, you know what? We got a code of conduct and fuck them niggers and fuck the NFL for being nigger lovers and watching and playing the game and letting these motherfuckers on the field. They all felt the same way Donald Trump was tweeting, calling them sons of bitches for being out there, for allowing them to play when they pay their rate. All right? So that was not about us, family. I just want to make that clear. This whole idea that these football players feel like they're going to hold out. You know what I mean? First of all, I'm not even concerned about the NFL. They can do whatever they want. They had a chance, you know, holding out until Colin Kaepernick. That's still begging for white man's attention. Y'all will really do some shit? Take all those millions that y'all should have been stacking up instead of blowing on cars, sneakers, and all other type of expensive jewelry and bullshit, and expensive vacations and things of that nature. Y'all should have been stacking that bread so that one day y'all could buy y'all freedom papers. That's what you should have been doing. So, you know what I'm saying? So, and stop by having all these white wives and shit that's, you know, banking in on the fact that you're short in lifespan due to all those high-impact collisions that you take and all the brain damage that you incur, that they'll be able to, you know, walk away with all your, you know, your estate once you're dead, and that money goes right back into the white community. See, they practice that long-term, you know, investment. You know, they don't give a fuck about that turnover in the first year. They're going to catch you in the last year, all right? So I don't care about all that. That's insignificant, you know what I'm saying? Still begging the white man to get entry. You know, saying they want Colin Kaepernick to get a job. So if Colin Kaepernick get a job, does that change the fact that these racist sons of bitches showed y'all they don't care about black lives? You know what I'm saying? You Negroes can be bought for so little. You have no integrity. All right? So then we go to the barbecue. And I'm not speaking to everybody. I'm speaking to those who could not, who cannot, for some strange reason, not watch a childish game. Can't just let go. No wonder they're killing us in the fucking streets. We, you know, all they got to do is dangle a carrot in our face and we just say, fuck it. We'll keep killing them. We'll give you our children. Can I just watch another game, please? You know what I'm saying? So this whole situation, Barbecue Becky, you know what I'm saying? The Barbecue Becky situation where you got people. You know, there was a meme or a video out recently where it was sort of like, you know, satire where a brother was calling a cop someone. White guys in the park, and he was, you know, making all these ridiculous claims, you know. For who, for what? Who are you trying to convince that this shit was hypocritical, that the shit was hypocritical? We already know. So are you, again, trying to get white folk to see the error in their ways, the error in their behaviors? Because they already know. So stop begging them to see them for who they are. They see it. They're proud of it. And when they don't, they hide. They talk it. Hush and whispered tones, but it doesn't change the fact that they already know who they are. They know what they do and they know what they get away with. So why do you keep crying to them? It makes no fucking sense. All right? That's what we were talking about a while back. You know, I put a post up saying, you know, this is now, you know, the fight for love in the black community is going to be between the RBG Africans and the RBG Americans. I can't take credit for that. I have to give that to you know, my good brother, Brother Shamari, Eric E. Grimes, because he actually coined the phrase. But, you know, I ran with it because I think it's legitimate. If you are sitting here begging or crying back to these, you know, devils to see the errors in their ways, and you're trying to appeal to them, what you're asking and seeking is refuge in their system. You're still seeking to be a part of this thing called America. You think with a tweak here, you know, a lube job there, we can straighten this shit out. And I promise you, America is working the way it was designed to work. You want to know when America starts misfiring and working against its own best interests? America starts doing that the second black people feel empowered about some shit. The second black people feel empowered about some shit, you know what I'm saying? Then you'll start seeing your white friends get uncomfortable. You'll start seeing your white friends post up and start, you know, looking at you funny. And I don't know about that. You know, I just don't think that's fair. You know what I'm saying? Let a few too many of you get jobs that they had pegged for their white comrades. Let a few of you too many, you know what I'm saying, get accepted and shit. You want to see how white supremacy starts falling apart a little bit? Go take the so-called royal wedding that all so many conscious Negroes broke my heart with falling in love with that bullshit. But go to Britain, to where those motherfuckers, they had to literally pass laws that said that if you speak ill of the royal wedding, we'll arrest your ass. They literally had to pass laws to tell people to shut the fuck up about their displeasure with the fact that they're bringing this darky into the royal family. You know what I'm saying? And I don't even want to get into that bullshit anymore. I don't even want to talk about that. I'm so heartbroken about the way that so-called conscious Negroes got up at 5 o'clock in the morning and was dressed in and dressed up for a fucking party they wasn't invited to. I don't even want to talk about that shit. I'm gonna tell you like this. I lost a lot of faith in the black conscious, so-called the small number of black people that I thought that was ready for empowering and independent black community. I lost so much faith that day. I still have not regained it. I don't know when I will. And those cats, I ain't saying no names. You know who you are. But I saw you. And I'm not going to forget who you are when we start getting shit together, because we are moving on it. You know what I'm saying? We're moving. Wakusu, Brother Ajay. Peace and black power. I see Sister Monica Mitchell in the house. Brother Samaj is on fire. I see my brother Chris Gibson. That's right, brother. Facts. Shout out to my brother Chris Gibson, too, who made it back up to Philly for a week, for a couple days inside, and went to West Philly Produce and broke bread with my brother Arnett Woodall. My brother Arnett Woodall is still trying to make things happen out there in West Philadelphia on 62nd Street. So shout out to you, brother. Peace and black power. Recognize it all. I see my brother in with the ice cream. I gotta get his my brother Andrew's got the ice cream drink popping off right now, going all over the place. I don't fuck with Walmart, but I'm glad your business is thriving, brother. You know what I'm saying? You know, the ice cream joint. I think I posted something up earlier, the newspaper article. But I love to see us pop. I love to see it going. It was a sister recently here in Philly who just started. She has a hair and beauty supply store at 22nd in Indiana. Y'all make sure it's on the Lehigh Avenue corridor on 22nd Street. Y'all make sure y'all check that sister out. There's no need now for anybody in Philadelphia to be going anywhere else for their beauty supply needs. Let's give this sister all the business she can handle so that she can expand. There were black people working in that store. There were black people celebrating with that woman. I love it. It just fills me with joy and hope to know that black people are winning. You know what I'm saying? We're winning some of these battles, family. I just want y'all to know we're winning some of these battles. We ain't just taking losses. You know what I'm saying? We're getting our wins here and there. So, you know what I'm saying? But back to the whole concept of begging, y'all. We got to stop this shit, though. Yo, and here's the thing, that I saw a lot of memes out, people clowning Roseanne Barr. Apparently, Roseanne Barr made this tweet. And Twitter's getting a lot of people in trouble, man. People just, you know, y'all need to don't think twice before you post some shit, especially if you have a, you know, a large audience that can hit you where your pockets are. Roseanne Barr apparently tweeted that Valerie Jarrett, she happened to be an advisor to Michelle Obama. She said that Valerie Jarrett looked like the cross between, I forgot what the fuck she said, and a monkey. Now, I'm sitting here, I'm looking at this shit, I'm laughing, right? Because I'm like, yo, when people want to tell the truth, they say some of the most ignorant shit. But she got fired. And I want black people to know, she didn't get fired for us. It wasn't that she did something. It wasn't that, you know, Wanda Sykes quit the show and then made a stink and got her fired. That had nothing to do with her getting fired. I want y'all to understand that right now, even though they don't give a fuck about black people, they have to maintain this perception that ABC and Disney are not a racist, you know, endeavor. They have to give this, because you got to understand the history of ABC and Disney, specifically Disney. Disney started on some racist shit. Like, Walt Disney was racist as hell. He wouldn't even let black people work in Disney World when he was the fuck alive. You know what I'm saying? Walt Disney was racist as shit. You know what I mean? But, yo, the thing that happened, so they have to give the impression, because you got to understand, ABC and Walt Disney, they're in the movie making business. And what movie did black people just make the number one comic movie of the world of all time? That's right, Black Panther. So you can't, and they have, from what I understand, there's like two or three more Black Panther movies to come. You can't have more Black Panther movies under the same thing. If somebody would have reached back and said, y'all let Roseanne Barr say this shit, and then you're gonna sit there and pimp black people again. So they had to, you know, that's the image they're doing, but it wasn't because they give a damn about her disrespecting black people. They didn't give a fuck about that. You know what I'm saying? That whole idea, the behind them getting rid of Roseanne Barr, was strictly because they wanted to make sure that they maintained their image. They wanted to make sure they maintained their image of not necessarily, you know, looking. They wanted the perception of them not being a racist establishment to be exhibited. So, you know, they can come out on top because they have, you know, they've had to fight that stigma, that Walt Disney stench. You know, bad enough, the Walt Disney Company is full of perverts. And the whole movie franchise, they had like, there was this big bust years ago, dozens of people that was working. They got an underground city in Walt Disney World. Dozens of people that was working in an underground city had gotten locked up. And they kept that shit real quiet. You know what I mean? But there was a lot of people that got locked up a couple of years ago with that Disney World thing. And it was based on the fact that they were doing like perverted shit. I don't know. I don't want to say things out of jest, but I think if I'm not mistaken, they were like using their cameras inappropriately. They had like known pedophiles that was working for them. And you know, pedophiles, you can't work in places children are going to be at, especially them underground tunnels and shit. You know, it's a movie. Eddie Murphy was in Beverly Hills Cop 3, right? And Beverly Hills Cop 3 was talking about Wally World. Well, Wally World really was Disney World. You know what I'm saying? With the underground city. So watch that to give you an idea of what they're talking about with the underground city and Disney World and so forth. But again, you know what I'm saying? I've seen with this whole Roseanne Barr thing. Black people, again, plantation splaining. Well, not plantation, yeah. Plantation splaining, trying to, you know, show that, oh, it's cool for, you know, the people who are, because Roseanne Barr, she got a lot of, you know, white trash followers. And they were all talking about how she, her freedom of speech was violated. And then black people were, once again, pointing out the hypocrisy of, well, if her free speech was violated, then so was Colin Kaepernick's. And because they both were terminated from a workplace, then both of them should receive equal access back to work. Or one way or the other, the treatment should be same. And I keep saying over and over again, who are you having this argument with? Like, who's the judge and jury that's going to decide this verdict? Who are you making your appeal to? You keep making your appeal to these white motherfuckers that don't give a fuck about nothing you got to say. They don't care about none of that shit. They don't give a flying fuck about whether or not it's justified. You know the funniest thing, man, about white folk? There was a whole rash of police shootings like 2 years ago. And what was funny was they would be in the news, like in the news feeds, and they would be in the post, and they would be talking about how, you know, we need to burn, you know, we need to, you know, kill these bastards, these niggas, this, that, and the other. And then they would find out that the shooters were white, and just like a big rig slamming on his brake and coming to a dead stop, they would stop talking about that shit. They would go on code. They wouldn't even acknowledge the shooting anymore. They would, all that Blue Lives Matter shit halted. They would start deleting the threads and shit. They understand that if it don't work for them, that all that righteousness that we talk about, all that moral justice and being, you know, right is right, and some things is not about race. And I remember somebody tried to tell me that bullshit a while ago. And, you know, I don't have time to play with children. But they were, they know that if something will damage their community, they'll either isolate the situation where it's a total lone wolf situation, lone nutcase situation, mental health situation, but they won't attach or attribute or take credit to it for their whole community. Us, on the other hand, we keep trying to appeal to them by falling on the fucking sword all the time. And that is some of the most ignorant stuff I've ever seen. We will say stuff like, you know, if a black guy or a black woman is caught up in a crime, see, that's why you can't be around all these niggas, because all these niggas, and I'm using the word niggas, I'm using it for effect here. You can't be around all these niggas because that's how they act. This is typically what, this is why black people can't do nothing. Black people, their own worst enemy. I've never seen anybody else say that shit about themselves. But we want to appear to be moral so that white folk will look at us and say, see, they're not going to play the race card. We can let them in. Newsflash. They play the race card every time they assess you. They play the race card every time they choose not to acknowledge their fuckery. I'll say this over and over again. I've never understood how a group of people who could be so wicked, a group of people who could be so evil, can convince the group that they've been wicked to, that they've been evil to, that they're the ones that owe everybody else an explanation. How is it that black people owe everybody an explanation for being shitted on all the time? Do we just, what, brush the shit off our shoulders? What? How is it that they have convinced us that we are to blame for everything when they are the main culprit for all the debauchery, all the wicked shit in the world, all the land grab and land steal in the world? But yet and still, they make us morally bankrupt just by pointing the finger to us. They throw the rock and hide their hand. We pick up the rock and somebody looks at us, and then we feel obligated to, you know, plantation explain our way out of this. You know what I'm saying? I just don't get it. I just don't understand it. I don't understand how we keep falling for this shit over and over again, and how we don't have the gumption to stand up to them and say, nah, we saw you throw it. We saw you throw the rock. This shit belongs to you. Here, take this back and all the ones you've thrown at us for the last 500 fucking years. I don't understand it. I know the fear plays a factor, and that's something that we don't like to acknowledge, that we're terrified of losing, you know, the love of the white community. We're terrified of losing the protections that the white mommy, white daddy provide us. You know, they pay our bills, they provide our food, they provide our energy. You know, they give us jobs, and you know, they run the infrastructure, and then we just, you know, I mean, I've seen it up close and personal with black children, really intelligent black children, and one white child in the classroom. And all of the black children will become subservient to that white child. I've seen it. This shit is heartbreaking. And no matter how you try to empower the black children, it got to the point when I was in those classrooms and I was empowering the black children, the white child themselves was like, you know what? I'm just going to bow out because I already see what the fuck is going on here. But the black children still didn't take the character to step up and feel empowered because that white child was there. When the white child left the room, all of a sudden you start to hear the voice, you start to hear the bass nigga voice, you start to see the confidence reoccur. Yo, we gotta address that. And you can't address it by always making it seem as though the white man's authority is something we should be, you know, adhering to all the time. The white man's attention is something that we need to acknowledge all the time. You know what I'm saying? The white man is the end all be all, the justifiable, you know, high commander, this high commanding perch that we need to be sort of reaching to and recognizing and acknowledging as the Lord and overseer of all things living and dead. We got to stop doing that shit because our children see it. And then for generations to come, our children are looking at this. And our children are taking this in. They're watching us. See, we don't think they're watching us. All the years of children cussing, you're like, where'd you learn that word from? Shit, I spend all my time with you, and that's all I hear you saying. You know what I'm saying? We don't pick up on the fact that our children pick up on everything. They watch us in every single way. They watch us everywhere. You know what I'm saying? Wakusu, I see my brother out there, Wakusu, Brother Patrick, my brother Patrick Alexander, Black Liberation Movement out in Mississippi. Pat, brother, I got to holler at you, man. You know, I got some crazy shirt designs. I be sending Patrick designs. He probably laughing his ass off. Like, get out of here, rookie. Pat, I want to come up with a winner, bro. But, yo, we have got to stop selling our children on being, losing our confidence. This is why, and I used to do a blog talk show, and I hate blog talk. I swear to God, I hate blog talk. But I got started on the blog talk show doing these live feeds. And there was one evening that we had a round table discussion, and somebody had invited this white woman onto the show. And she was talking about, white establishment and all this other crazy shit. And then so she had asked something about, you know, what would it take for me to join, your movement, the movement that you put together. And I told her, no uncertain terms, could you ever join a movement that I was putting together? You know, for several different reasons. First of all, you're not obligated to the black community. You're not obligated to me. Your obligation comes from the fact that you were rejected from some aspect of your community and you want to make them pay. You know what I'm saying? You wanted to seek some type of sovereign, so you come to black people. Oh, white folk, when I see white folk who want to join black causes, I always treat them with a dose of skepticism because I know that they don't come from a place of pure intent, that they come from a place of feeling as though I can't get authority here, so I'm going to come seek my ass where these lowly Negroes reside, and I'm just going to speak on shit. Because you never know, white folk just can't be like worker bees in any group setting. They always have to, you know what? Maybe we should try it this way. Maybe we should do it this way. They always try to assert their authority. They always try to, you know, wiggle their way into a position to where they're challenging the authority that's there, and they're trying to place themselves in a place of leadership so they'll be, you know, able to assert some sort of authority by themselves. So no, fuck that. You can't come in. Second of all, it's the cognitive dissonance that still is in us. That still is in us that will make us overly conscious of the fact that they're in our presence. So we start walking different. We start talking different. We don't talk with the bass that comes from our belly, that bellows. We start talking nasally. We start trying to be more articulate. We start trying to be less forceful. We start trying to be less harmful. We start trying to, you know, pontificate our words. You know, sound out our vowels. You know, we start talking crazy and shit. We start doing some wild shit. And we basically lose our power in their presence. So until we can actually create the situation to where black people, because I've seen it where black people pound their fist on the motherfucking table, white men come in the room, they start picking up a knife and fork to eat chicken. You know what I'm saying? I've seen it. I'm not having that in any organization I work in. And I'm damn sure, this is why I have issues with working with a lot of black organizations now. Because unfortunately, and this is a real big problem in black empowerment, we don't get a lot of support from black people within the community. That's just the bottom line. And when I say support, I'm strictly talking financial support. I'm talking boots on the ground. We don't get those two things from the people in the community. We get a lot of likes. We get a lot of social media applause. We get a lot of virtual attention. But in terms of actually boots on the ground, this, that, and the other, and cash in hand, you know, donating to a cause, this, that, and the other, we don't get that on a consistent basis. White people know that. So these white liberals who want to work and control both sides, they find a way in. And typically what they do is they find these projects that we're working on that's not receiving funding, and they'll show up with some cash. And if you're somebody that's been working on a project for like 4 years and it's about to fold, you're not going to have anything to show for it. It's extremely hard to walk away from it. I don't give a fuck what people call you. They can call you a coon or whatever you want. The same people calling you a coon is not showing up with boots on the ground or cash in hand. They're standing back judging. And I've seen a lot of black organizations partner up with white organizations and corporations because they could not get black people to spend. Black people would rather spend the money in the speakeasy. We'd rather spend the money at the bar on a Saturday and Friday night. We'd rather go to, you know, and bougie Negroes would rather spend their bread or faking it till you make it with the, you know, high-priced cars, houses they can't afford. You know what I'm saying? Things of that nature. So basically, this is how our movements get turned inside out. And this is why they start getting the liberalist agendas. And all of a sudden, everything non-black becomes a black person's issue. You know what I'm saying? Now you're fighting Border Patrol. Now you're fighting off hoses to protect Native American land. You know what I'm saying? Now you're trying to fight for, you know, for same-sex and transgender bathrooms and shit. But then when it comes to fighting for your causes, transgenders don't show up, gays don't show up, Latinos don't show up. Well, some Latinos will show up. I'll give them credit. Some Latinos will lock in and load that black and brown thing. There's a small percentage that will show up. But the Native Americans, fuck out of here. The natives, shit, and half of them akin to us. But nah, man, you know, we got too many $5 Indians running their shit. But see, that's what happens when we become beggars. We have to, you know, and we always say this, you know, we have to be honest and stop lying to each other. When you want to be an RBG American, you know, after a while, and I think maybe it's just that, let me just slow down. Let me say this right. When you want to be an RBG American, you want black people to be treated well. You want black people to be treated right. You want black people to be treated with respect and honor. You want those things for the black community. But you're willing to negotiate those things. See, when you talk about RBG African, we don't want nothing to do with this shit. We don't want nothing to do with America, the concept of America, anything about America. We understand America functions fine. It has no place for us. So we're talking about an independent black union. We're talking about an independent type of sovereignty that we can create for ourselves. You know, where we don't have to adhere to these laws and principles. We don't have to adhere to these the jurisprudence of what makes America great. You know what I'm saying? So, and I think maybe if that gray area is cleared up, maybe we would have more people understanding the need for black independence rather than trying to negotiate your freedom and nationhood under the guise of white supremacy. You know what I'm saying? So we one of the things we want to do, family, is we want to get on code with not necessarily wanting to seek their attention. We don't need the attention. We don't need the attention of white folk. We don't need the attention of, you know, anybody who is not about building black empowerment. We don't need it. We don't need to keep going back and forth. If anybody sees me on social media, you notice I don't argue with nobody. I make my point. You can agree with it or not. That's on you. I don't go to anybody's post on social media and argue with anybody. If I see something I don't like, I'll say, interesting. And then I'll keep scrolling. It's just that simple. You know what I'm saying? I see what they say. Okay, cool. I see what's popping. I see what's going on. And I keep it moving. I don't feel the need to go back and forth with nobody if I don't agree with them. You know what I'm saying? Who does that? I don't have time for that shit. My day's too full. You know what I'm saying? So we have to get on code, family, and we have to get on. And when I always talk about get on code, the code of black empowerment, bigging black people up, supporting Black businesses, being Black businesses that support the clientele of the Black community, that caters to the clientele of the Black community, creating institutions. You know, I don't care for anybody that's going to say, you know, the wrongs that have been done to us by the system. If you're not willing to change, there's no need to even talk about it. Don't tell me about the next brother or sister who gets their head blown off unjustly. It's going to keep happening. Why? Because we're not doing anything to change the system. We're not doing anything to create our own system. So as long as we're in this system, as long as we're in this matrix, these are the things that we're going to be, these are the things that we're going to be, a bridge to. It's going to happen to us more and more over and over again. You know what I'm saying? There's no point in trying to collaborate with a known devil. You know what I'm saying? The very description of the devil tells you that the devil is untrustworthy. You know what I'm saying? Peace, KC, what's going on? I see you. We have Sister Lauren Taylor. Hold on. Sister Latia Taylor. Okay, I had to make sure I got to look closer. I got these shades on. Yeah, I'm wearing the glasses, y'all. This ain't no cool shit. It's that I'm on the latter end of dealing with my allergies. So, you know what I'm saying? I ain't want y'all thinking that a brother was losing sleep or this shit was stressing me out. It's not. So that's why I got the glasses on. Plus, it's bright as hell in here. You know, I don't know if y'all can tell, but this shit is like being outside. That's why my brother's getting dark again. You know what I mean? That's what I'm talking about. Look at that melanin. Sun baking that melanin. Sun kissing the brother. You know what I mean? Y'all better not laugh at that either. Anyway, come on, family. At some point, we have got to get to the point of making us the priority. Now, if you want to show Black people the hypocrisy of white, of white domination and the hypocrisy of the laws so that they will get on board, cool. If you have the intent on showing, the uneven treatment of the law, whereas they get treated like citizens and we get treated like terrorists, that's great. Show it to us. Don't make it where we're begging them or where, but they will never see it like that. Fuck them. I don't care how they see it. How do we see it? How do we perceive it? How do we move forward? That's the plan. You know what I mean? See, Brother Edward, you say you dream of that place every night? So do I. I dream of the place. Fuck it. Dreaming? Put a movie. We created a movie behind it. I can't even keep speaking on this enough. I'm going to create a curriculum for the Independence Day Project, and I'm going to teach that shit in the class. Because apparently putting a movie together is not enough. You know what I mean? We're going to start having classes. And y'all got to pay for that shit because time is money. But, you know what I mean? We have got to get to the point where we are the priority. The focal point is us. The focal point is about empowering a Black community. You know, it's sad. I was speaking to another group of children yesterday at my alma mater, Simon Gratz High School, right here in North Philly. I was speaking to a group of children yesterday. And when they found out, one of my brothers, my brother Oba, was showing the movie, Brother Oba Lloyd was showing the movie to the children, the Independence Day Project. And when they found out that it was my movie, the first thing they asked me was, did you do it to get rich? That's the first question these children asked me. Did I put the movie together to get rich? Am I a millionaire? Those are the questions the children asked me. And it was heartbreaking because it speaks to a mentality, a mindset amongst our babies that we've been in the institution and allowing to happen to where they feel as though everything we do is about becoming a celebrity and everything we do is about celebrity worship. And so when they asked me, was like, I'm some type of big star. No, I'm not a big star. I live around the corner. I actually walk to the school. You know what I'm saying? And, we are teaching our children that this is what they should shoot for. I don't mind teaching them to shoot for the stars. I don't mind teaching them to be great. But to be celebrities, stars, this, that, and the other, nah, you know, it's not feasible. And the thing is, because we're teaching them that this is what they look up to. This is why when a Kanye West says asinine shit, like, you know, slavery was a choice, it has so much credence in the community. This is why, instead of paying attention to geopolitical situations going on around the world, you know, and in your local neighborhood, you're more concerned about, you know, the Pusha T and Drake battle. You know what I'm saying? This is why when we start talking about, this past election was one of the most, you know, important elections of the last few years. A lot of policies got passed and a lot of policies are on the table right now, pushing for, you know, huge land grabs and pushing for genocidal policies to go forth in your neighborhoods and communities. But yet and still, we're not focused on none of that. We're not focused on the fact that policies are going in place where, you know, we have a organization here in Philadelphia called Licenses and Inspections. Licenses and Inspections has been going on a rampage in my neighborhood, going on a rampage, you know, declaring places inhabitable for people to live. You see these big ass orange stickers on all these different buildings. And what they're doing is they're clearing the way for the next stage of gentrification, which is really the next stage of genocide in a community when you kill a community through, you know, overly aggressive police and land tech. And right now, I've seen a spike in police activity around here. I've seen a spike in parking authority activity. I mean, literally every block I've gone on, you've seen people having their cars and taking and driving privileges suspended. Now, you might not think that's a big deal, but when you have a person whose livelihood depends on their ability to get around and you take their car from them, that is a big fucking deal. You have just caused strife and a potential a situation where that person might lose their ability to feed their family. They might lose, it's going to cause additional stress in their household. You don't know the health conditions of the person who you're violating right there. And I mean, as a domino effect, we're not paying attention to none of those things. We should be on boots on the ground. Neighborhood committees should be out there stopping, you know, institutions like a parking authority. And I have a personal beef with them. But in addition to that, these crooked politicians that everybody goes out and complains about voting for, you know, the vote shamers, vote for this. I just shared an article earlier. Shout out to my brother Carl Dash for finding this article in Philadelphia, from one of the Philadelphia newspapers here. But it was an article speaking on, you know, how they're going to take at Broad Street and Lehigh. This is in North Philadelphia. At Broad and Lehigh, they're going to be doing this renovation where they're going to build a 40-story or a 20-story apartment building, and then they're going to have like a 6-story, a 20-story commercial building and a 6-story housing complex. And what they're talking about is how they should be utilizing public money. Let me explain to you what that means. When they say that they should be utilizing public money, that is welfare. That is the same pool of money that welfare recipients get their money for. But they have beautiful words and terms for it. You know, they call them government expenditures. You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't sound like welfare. They change the terminology. But they use 80 to 90% of the money in that. It goes tax-free to businesses and corporations in your city. Typically speaking, you complain about your tax dollars going to EBT cars. No, your tax dollars are going to high rises in Center City, City Hall, the metropolitan area of your community. That's where your tax dollars are going. All these sky rises, these high rises going up, and your housing taxes going up, all of those things are coming from your tax dollars. And we're worried about, Pusha T body, you know, Sergeant Drake, Pusha T ain't meek. Yeah, but ain't none of them motherfuckers got your problems. I used to. I don't know what the hell I'm listening to anymore now. This shit is insulting. But You know, that's where we are, family. That's where we are. And we consistently are begging white folk for their attention. They're showing us in so many ways they care not for our intentions. They care not. They don't have any morals. They are a very immoral people, and they have no respect for you. Their whole obligation is to domination. That's it. There is no such thing as, a moral compass for the white man. The white man and the white woman are the two most treacherous creatures the world has ever seen. You know what I'm saying? We just saw this white woman try to blame Morgan Freeman. You know, Mr., if we just stop talking about race, then the problem of racism will just go away. Just stop talking about it. Yeah, motherfucker, I bet you wish you would stop talking about it now. All these cats. We just saw a clip of a white woman where you had, I think it was Michael Caine and Morgan Freeman, and Michael Caine said something about, complimenting a woman on being pregnant and she was fat. And Morgan Freeman responded to Michael Caine, and the reporter tried to say that he was talking about her. So she tried to get him up on sex charges. And this is why I tell everybody to this day, I don't trust shit that come out of a white woman's mouth. But they always on social, specifically. And next week, we'll probably talk about the relationship between, the house mistress and the field Negro. You know, because that's typically what the relationship is between white women and black men right now, where they still feel as though they have some authority over black men. And that's the whole push behind the women's suffrage movement. Push behind the women's suffrage movement, to those who don't know, was basically white women were mad that black men had a right to vote and they didn't. That was the whole push on the women's suffrage movement. That was the whole thing. So it always started out as them being enemies of the black man. You know what I'm saying? And so, but that's another show for another day. But I brought up the thing about the, they don't give a fuck about integrity. All they care about is winning. So if they have to cheat, you know what I mean? If they have to cheat, oh, my brother Kevin is on. Peace, brother Kevin. Wakusu. If they have to cheat, they will cheat, family. And they don't give a fuck as long as at the end of the game they dominated you. They don't want to just win. They want to dominate you. That's all they care about. And then they'll write the story afterwards. Winston Churchill said, I don't give a fuck about history because when the time comes, I'll write it. Napoleon. Napoleon said, history are fables agreed upon. Basically, a bunch of fucking lies we're just going to agree to write about. That's what history is. And these are the things that we need to start understanding. We got this thing where we get cowardly. And when I say cowardly, I mean this shit the way I'm saying it. We get cowardly, so it's like somebody slaps you, rolls their sleeves up and say, come on, let's fight. And we start articulating the force of the wind that carried that slap onto our face. We start talking about, well, why are we even fighting? You know, we try to dance around the whole fight. You know what white supremacy is? White supremacy is if Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather get into the ring, and every time Conor McGregor would hit Floyd Mayweather, instead of fighting back, Floyd Mayweather would start breakdancing to some shit. Floyd Mayweather would do a new dance move. He'd get hit again, he'd start singing. He'd get hit again, he'd start doing, he'd start doing backflips and shit. He would do everything he could to avoid fight. That's what our fight against white supremacy looks like right now. We do all types of circus and parlor tricks to avoid facing the fact that our mortal enemy is white supremacy. And then empowering us is the only way we're going to defeat white supremacy. The only way. And make no mistake about it. If we're talking about black empowerment, the side effect of black empowerment is layer by layer removing the bricks of white supremacy. So they're not our focus, but we can't build their house and our house. So when we stop building their house, when we stop allowing ourselves to be mules, when we stop allowing ourselves to be usable Negroes, we stop allowing ourselves to have our resources wiped clean with them and utilized by them, when we start using those things for ourselves and pooling our resources, when we start pooling our energy, when we start pooling our genius, and we start building for ourselves, who are they going to draw from? We've already established that the white community cannot sustain itself. This is why they have to go on world conquest and always talk about expansion. They can't sustain itself. Every time in history that they've tried to sustain themselves on their own talent and merit, this society has crumbled. It has fallen to the ground. It has been destroyed and decimated, and specifically from within. All the negative terms that you hear about, you know, today in regards to derelict people are in relation to white supremacy, are relation to white tribes, the vandals. We talk about vandalism. It was an actual tribe in the so-called dark ages of Europe called the Vandals. And these motherfuckers was going around raping and pillaging whoever they can find, kill, having sex with corpses and shit, all sorts of crazy stuff. That was the Vandals. You know, you had the Saxons, you know what I'm saying? They were a ragamuffin group of gang banging. They were all gang banging and killing each other and living in inhospitable filth. They cannot sustain. They can't create life. They can't. They're not innovative. 90% of the world's inventions right now that are keeping the world on and popping have come from us. The resources for the world that have the world moving in such way that is progressing forth and technology and things of that nature, that is still coming from black people. There was a brother, you know, and somebody needs to watch out for this brother. This brother over in Africa, he created a car that it uses the fucking frequency of the vibration of the world. Like, I'm not making this up either. He made a car that rides on its own vibration. That's just like vibranium or some shit. Right? He made a car that runs on his own vibration. Please make sure that this brother doesn't get pushed off the roof like the other brother that found a new filtration method for salt, for desalinization of salt water. Yeah, they threw a brother off the roof after he had the patent, and a white company picked up the patent. You know what I mean? Over in South Africa. Look up, and I'm not making this shit up. See, we got to start being more attentive to geopolitical struggle. Like, you know, begging the white man. People said we moving into the world wedding. That's a step up for black people. No, it was a step up for white people. It was the new Obama shit. So now when they go to colonize Africa, they can show up with this pale ass black face saying that this is an African move. This is a move, a missionary move. And I'm not even gonna get into that no more because I think I've already explained that enough. But we got to start building on our own accord. So I'm going to go to some of the questions that I've been seeing, you know, on the screen. I'm going to try to address some of these things before we call it a night. I see we had a lot of people participating. Yes, Brother Patrick Alexander Wakusu, member of the National Black Liberation Front. You know what I'm saying? And I don't mention that enough, that we're working in conjunction with brothers and sisters all over the country. We're building something special for black people. Yes, we are winning a lot of battles. We're winning a lot of battles, and we're going to start putting some publicity behind those battles soon enough. You know what I'm saying? We're going to show y'all, family. Brother Samai said, I love checking devils. Keeping them in their place and deflating their egos. I hear you, Brother Samai, but I'm going to tell you right now, I care not about their egos right now. The only concern I have for white people right now is making sure that they're not in a place to harm us. You know what I'm saying? We're still too loosey-goosey with letting these motherfuckers in our neighborhoods and our spaces. In terms of an intellectual dialogue, I never have intellectual discourse with white folk. They're too disingenuous. They'll redirect the argument. They're very good at redirection when it comes to addressing it. They never acknowledge anything that holds them culpable or accountable. They never acknowledge anything that makes them accountable or culpable to anything that's been said or done, you know, in regards to, you know, the wickedness of the destruction that they've caused. They never acknowledge that in the back. You talk about just like what Bill O'Reilly did back when Trayvon Martin got killed. The first thing Bill O'Reilly did, well, what about crime in Chicago? Nobody was even talking about that shit. Nobody was talking about Chicago at that time. Nobody was talking about, I mean, we were talking about, you know, Chirac, but we weren't talking about it, you know, in opposition to the fact that George Zimmerman took it upon himself to be a fucking vigilante and kill an innocent child who was going to the store, you know, to grab some snacks for a goddamn basketball game. We weren't talking about, you know, so how the fuck did you switch it? And then that became a conversation. Colin Kaepernick kneeled because, you know, well, first he was sitting down, you know, which is a much more powerful thing. Sitting down because of, you know, violence towards, you know, the unmitigated violence of police officers towards black people. And then they changed it to, from him doing that to being disrespectful to the flag and disrespectful to the troops. And that's a, listen, if we want to be, if you want to make that the fucking argument, then why is it that you same people step over homeless vets all the fucking time, calling them bums, calling the cops on them, creating policies and shit so that people can't even feed them? People can't even offer them money. But yet, still, you love the vets? I pass people with holding signs all day talking about I'm a former vet, Iraqi Gulf vet, this, that, and the other, and I'm homeless. I know people who work for the VA who say they take phone calls from vets all the time who are struggling. And you know how many vets? It was like 1 month, like 500 vets died in California because they were on hold waiting for the VA to get back to them. That's how, so you don't give a fuck about vets. Let's not change the argument. You know what I'm saying? Let's not change the argument because they get the worst treatment when they come back from these wars. Post-traumatic stress syndrome. Body parts missing, you know what I'm saying? Exposure to radiation and all the different things. What do they call it? What are the depleted uranium artillery? You know what I'm saying? Exposed into all that stuff. They come home whacked out, kept cancer and all types of shit. I don't give a fuck about the troops, but they wanted to deflect the argument. So they deflected it like two or three times to get away from the original conversation. So I don't have conversations with white folk when it comes to, you know, straightening them out. No European, you could put the greatest European in the ring with me, he couldn't last two rounds in regards to a debate. But the debate will change topics over and over and over again. Tucker Carlson is good for that. Pierce Morgan used to be good for that. I already talked about Bill O'Reilly, ass snatching, you know, self, you know what I'm saying? Mr. Me Too, one of the Me Toos that should have been sued by now a million times. I don't address white folk, bro. We don't do that. Don't waste your energy with them. You know what I'm saying? Brother, yeah, we do dream of that place. All right. Let's see. Brother Edward McGill said, I spoke at St. Gabe's, and all the kids said if they got some money, they would open go-go bars. That's the shit I'm talking about. And you know why they would open go-go bars? Because they probably pass go-go bars in the neighborhood all day. You know who they don't pass? They don't pass black doctors. They barely pass black teachers. And the only reason they pass the black teachers is because the black teachers can't afford to live in the suburbs. They don't pass black lawyers. They don't pass black judges. They don't even pass black cops because black cops can afford to live in the suburbs, and they often do. You know what I'm saying? They can't pass any black person of any distinction in their community because we're told to leave the community. We're told to get your shit and get out. You know what I'm saying? And that's one of the biggest dangers that we face right now in our community, the fact that we talk about white flight, shit, we got black flight. And black fight was more vicious and more visible because these children don't have anybody to look to but the pimps, the pushers, and the prostitutes, the basketball players, and the rappers. That's the only ones that stay around them. So this is what's happening, and we don't have anybody to stand up and address this. You know what I'm saying? Let me tell you about the presence of when you have a strong brother or sister stand. So I was talking to my brother Shaka Mukasa Shakur earlier today, another member of the National Black Liberation Front. And as I was on the phone with him, you know, we always talk, good brother. He was watching, he was on pool watch. He was volunteering to watch the pool at the local housing complex he was at, you know, because basically they didn't have enough staff for whatever the reason. He took it upon himself to volunteer. And so while he's volunteering, I'm listening to him, we're having a conversation, but he's also engaging the children, the parents, this, that, the other. Let me tell you, I have so much love and respect for what he, for what I heard going on the other end of that phone, you know, the phone call. That brother was, you know, was jovial, he was stern, but he was opening and inviting. You know how powerful that is when children can see a black man who is an authority, but he doesn't have to be an abusive authority, but he's in a protective authority to where the children feel better because that brother's there. The children feel safer because that brother's there. See, that's the real work right there. We can get into the pseudosciences, the pseudo-politics, we can get into the pseudo-military, the pseudo-psychology, we can get into all that. But you gotta have a little bit of heart because you gotta actually go to where the people are and be visible and be a presence and be accommodating to the things they need. Fuck begging white man for anything. You have to be that person. You have to be that brother. You have to be that sister to stand out there with the brothers and sisters and be the one on call, on duty, on deck. That has to be you. It can't be somebody else. That's why we're losing in some battles. That's why in certain circumstances, our situation is dire. Because we can get behind our computers, we could put on our costumes, we could put all the jewelry, the handmade jewelry and shit, we could wear dashikis, we could rock the ox, we can do all those different things. But if you're scared to sit on your steps or your porch or your stoop and address the people in your neighborhood, then what good are you? Because the revolution will not be televised, but I'm pretty sure it's not going to be streamed from your goddamn bedroom. It's not going to be streamed from your basement office. It's not going to be streamed, you know, as you sit down across the coffee table and sip on herbal tea and talk about getting your chakras together. It's going to be shown when we're out there on the streets with our young brothers and sisters who have love and admiration for us and for people who feel protected. I'm going to say one more thing before I get off the air tonight. You know, I don't work a regular job. You know what I'm saying? I don't work a regular job. I don't work regular hours. So I'm out and about taking care of my personal business or business for the, you know, the Independence Day Project, which I suggest everybody in the thread, you need to grab a copy of the Independence Day Project. You know what I'm saying? You know, I see, me and Brother Shop was talking about post-traumatic stress syndrome that the community goes through. And we talked about it from a different angle, and I thought about it from another angle. Something we don't really take into consideration, but it's been really heavy on my heart lately, so I want to speak on this. You know, when I'm driving around or I'm walking, and I happen to come across our girls, you know, our little black girls, who might be on their way to school or on their way home from school. If they're not walking in a group and they walk past me, I can feel their fear. Let me tell you how troublesome that is to me. That when that baby sees me, she doesn't see somebody that's going to keep her safe. She sees somebody that she should be concerned about, that her safety is threatened by. And I've told you on many occasions, family, I've told you, I don't know if I've told a story about when my cousin, you know, died in a car accident and us young brothers were driving, looking for clothes, how we came across an elderly sister in the parking lot. And she saw us walking up our cars parked next to hers. And the nervousness, she started shivering and shaking to a point where she dropped her keys and it broke my heart. I still feel that pain every time I see our babies walking up and down the street. And I can only attest to the fact that there's a post-traumatic stress-related situation going on with our children, to where they all feel like they have to protect themselves from us because we are seen as their predators. If that doesn't shake you up, if that doesn't get you on your square, if that doesn't get you to the point where you want to do something to make these babies feel safe, I can't fuck with you. I can't bang with you. These babies should never feel threatened around us. These babies should never shiver and shake around us. They should always feel safe around us. And the fact of the matter is, when these babies are walking out of the houses now, they have to be on guard. You wonder why the young brother is ready to fight you in the street, because he don't feel safe. You never gave him a reason to feel safe, brother. You never gave him a reason to feel safe. These babies are going through that too. These girls are going through that too. And they're so young. And when I talk to them, they all can tell me about how grown men are saying all types of nasty shit to them. So when I walk up, they can't assume that I'm not going to be like that. They have to protect themselves because I might be like that. We're paying the black tax from our babies, our children, because we got assholes we're not checking. So I challenge y'all to get out there in the hood, y'all. Get out in our communities and make our community safe. Don't ask the white man. Don't ask for more police. Hell, they're probably taking our babies and raping them too. We know the shit goes down. That job of protection is ours. Stop advocating that shit. Stop abandoning your post willfully. Stop being tough behind this keyboard. Stop being tough behind this camera and get out there in the street and show me what you work. Show me what you work. How you gonna bang on the system of white supremacy and you can't even keep the babies that walk up and down your block safe? How are you gonna bang on the system of white supremacy when you can't even check the little ass, the nothing ass Negroes that are causing so much pain in our communities? They're suffering too, but that doesn't give them a right to inflict pain, and especially doesn't give them a right to inflict pain on our babies and on our women. If you're a man, get your act together. I can't help you, brother. You know what I mean? You might have gone through some shit. We all go through some shit. But I damn sure can't stand by as a man who sees himself as a protector in his community and allow for our babies to feel threatened by the mere fact that we're in their presence. So, family, I'm going to break off, you know, because we've been on for about an hour and a half. I gotta make some phone calls, you know. But what I wanna say is, you know, we are gonna win. I'm gonna see the victory in my lifetime. And if I don't, I'm going to enjoy the fact that I planted enough seeds that as an ancestor, I'll be able to say, this is what it was like, and this is what it was about, and this is my part. What's your part, family? With that said, family, Wakusu, wake up, clean up, stand up. Peace and black power. Love, we will win. I shall. In the state of the people.